Everybody, and welcome to another episode of Tales from the Doghouse: Separation Anxiety Explained. I am Stacey Bell from Focused Fun in the US, and with me today is
Ness Jones. I am in Australia from Separation Anxiety in Dogs Decoded. And what are we talking about today, Stacey?
Today we are talking about when training is hard to fit in. So when my son Brayden was little and something was difficult, he used to say hard to do. So, today we're talking about when training is hard to do.
Hard to do. Fair enough. That's
hard to do. That was like shortly. He would get frustrated really easily as a toddler. So if he said hard to do, you knew you had to give him space because pretty soon he'd be like throwing his toy trucks and stuff.
Oh, that's funny. So,
anyways, hopefully none of our listeners are getting to the point where they're frustrated enough to throw things. It can be tough when you're you really want to help your dog succeed in being home alone or comfortable while home alone, and like life is just getting in the way. So let's talk about some examples of stuff that we've seen with our clients, types of obstacles to training, and some things, maybe some guidance or tips to help them overcome those obstacles.
Yeah. So I actually, this is a very good topic at the moment. Oh, what's the right word? Current? That's not the right word either. There's a word I'm looking for.
Apropos?
No.
Okay.
Pertinent will do, but that's not the right word.
Pertinent, that's a perfect word, yes.
But so I have a client, shout out to Monique and Kobe. Ooh. Kobe is a little bit of a problem child at the moment. Mm. He was doing quite well, but he's a teenager.
Yes.
He's having teenage dramas, and we have actually called him a rat bag because he is being a little rat bag. So he is just going nuts. Like he, you know, young dogs, they can be kind of playful during the warm-up steps and, you know, but he actually was getting up in time, but it's really hard for poor Monique at the moment. And I think it's just a phase he's going through. But I mean, the last training session he did, he was so, so naughty the last couple ones. He's like grabbing cushions and at them. But
oh, right.
This one time he went out of the camera view down the hall into her bedroom and stole a shirt off wherever it was and brought it back into camera view, and he's like throwing it around, having a grand old time. And then she came back and took it off him. And the next step that he, you know, when she was outside, he went and got a tea towel from the kitchen and he was throwing that around. He's having so much fun, but she's not. But the thing is, right, so the problem is, you know, she works during the day and she has to set time aside to do the training, and often that is when he's just not in the right mindset.
Right,
and
right.
It's really, really hard for her to try and marry up her schedule with his brain.
Yeah. And I think you kind of hit on two things there, work schedules and kind of the activity level of the dog and how those mesh together, but they can also be separate problems. Like I know a lot with especially puppy clients, but some young dog clients too, they're either like wide open, you know, super active, or they're sleeping, right? So it's hard to find that happy in between where they're settled but not sleeping. So that is a really tough one, but also work schedules, and especially people who maybe work a shift schedule or in the healthcare where they're their schedule may shift a lot. And so they might not be able to train at a time of day when the dog is settled enough to do it. So yeah, those can be really tough. So what are some things that we can do in those situations to help when it's hard to do?
Yeah, well, I mean, in fairness to Monique, it's she's pretty much doing a lot of stuff that she should be. For example, he gets plenty of exercise. She's got plenty of mental stimulation, brain games. She is going to up that, though. So we are working on adding another layer to that, making it even harder for him to figure things out. Monique, if you're listening to this, you promised me a video of your trick training. I'm still waiting. And while we're on the subject, Brody was also going to give me a, Brody's the dog. Olivia was going to send me a video of her Brody trick training. And I'm still waiting for that. And I've been waiting a long time for that, Olivia. A long time. Naughty. So you're in the bad books, yeah. But actually touching on Brody, because he's a young dog as well. And he provides me lots of amusement because he will go and get into the shoes down by the front door. and they had these, what they call decoy shoes there. So the shoes that he's allowed to get into, so that the good shoes don't get ruined. But I'm thinking maybe they might need to move the good shoes altogether, because every now and then, e.g. last night's training session, Brody decides that, no, I'm going to have those shoes there. So
that's so funny.
Yeah.
Yeah. And just while we're on the subject, some dogs, you know, get playful in a session, and that's perfectly fine. We're just looking for a lack of anxiety. But sometimes dogs can grab things or play with their toys in ways that are just an outlet for their anxiety. So make sure that when you're, if you're working with, your dog trying to get help them be more comfortable with home alone training, and you're seeing them play with toys or objects in a more intense way than they usually would, or they're doing things that they usually wouldn't, then it doesn't mean that it's anxiety, but it just warrants a closer look. And working with a professional can help with that. So I just wanted to kind of call that out as an aside.
Yeah. Like that's, it's a good, thing to mention. Like I say to my clients, if the dog's playing, that's good, because play and panic can't coexist in the same world. A dog cannot possibly be in play mode and also be in panic mode. However, as you just said, if that play is too intense, then that's not what we're looking for. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So, you mentioned a couple things as far as activity level to set the dog up for success. One of the things that I recommend to my clients for dogs who are active and kind of have trouble coming down from that is to help them with a settling activity. So that could be one of the food games, but not one of the food games that are really active. So maybe more like along the lines of nose worky, or like something like scatter feeding, or some type of like more duration training, like a sit stay or a down stay or mat training or something like that to help them kind of come down. So just to help the dog change their mind frame from super active to calmer. And some dogs really need this, but most dogs I work with don't. But it is something that you can do. Like if you take your dog for a walk and they come in and they're like kind of running around the house, then maybe a quick scatter feed or some mat training or something like that can help them kind of transition into a different mindset. If you do have the ability, you'll notice that your dog probably has times of day that they are just naturally calmer, and then training at those times would be, you know, the first best option. But of course, if your work schedule conflicts with that, then the next best thing to do would be to try to help them with some kind of calming activity.
Yeah. So I've got a new client, Kelly, a dog's called. And yeah, the daytime sessions she's just struggling with, and she's only on really, really low time. So we're just doing it in the evening, and she's doing really well. She's acing every session.
Good.
Yeah. So at the moment, you know, that whole time of day thing is something we really have to consider. As she gets up higher in time, then we'll start playing around with that. But at the moment, because we just need that foundation, nice solid foundation. So
right.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's so interesting how some dogs have such a difference in their ability to cope with different times of day, and for other dogs it's not a big thing at all. Time of day doesn't matter, but for some dogs it is a really big thing. So if you're noticing a lot of variability in how your dog is doing, do take a look at that time of day factor and try to discern, you know, is my dog always struggling in the morning? Then if so, switch your training to only in the evenings or whenever is easiest for them. And then, like Ness said, once they build up some history of being home alone by themselves in the easier time, then you can revisit some of the more difficult times.
Yeah. So another client, Michelle, with Benny, he struggled in the mornings because that was the time that he was used to seeing his people go to work. And so initially when we started, we avoided the mornings, and then we did a training plan down the track when he built up that longevity and duration. Outside of that time, it was actually called the hustle bustle training plan. So because Michelle, she was always late. So she'd like get out of bed and go, oh my God.
rushing can be a hard one, even for in a scenario that the dog does well in, just adding that element of rushing around can, like, because even my dog who doesn't have the great if I'm rushing, he will have more trouble with me leaving than if I'm not.
I think having children added to the mix of trying to get them ready for school and all that sort of stuff adds another layer of difficulty, because, you know, kids can be tricky to get ready. And, you know, there is a lot of rush sort of stuff. So having children in the mix is, you know, you have to look at that and say, well, do we want to have the children involved in the training at first, or, you know, do we keep them out of the picture and then add them in a bit later?
Right. Yeah. And that really, a lot of that depends on the age of the children. Sometimes it's really not an option to have them go and play in the backyard by themselves, but sometimes it is, you know, and sometimes if
they're older, 2-year old outside.
Yeah.
Off you go, darling.
Bye-bye. But having a busy household is also one that I had down. And, you know, there are certain advantages to having a busy household in that the more people that are there, the more coverage options you have, meaning, you know, you can go out and do the grocery shopping or whatever without trying to find coverage or ordering ahead or those types of things. But by the same token, a busy household does make training a little bit more difficult as far as finding a time of day where everybody's not home. So finding a time to train. And then, like you said, if the children are young and kind of need to be a part of the training picture, that can be a little bit tricky trying to get out of the house. And for some dogs, if, you know, 2 or 3 people walking out the door is more difficult than just one person walking out the door. So, you know, all of those things will come into play. So for the really busy households, especially ones with young children, sometimes we'll just encourage you to train under conditions that might not be ideal, right? So it might be if you're on low durations and you have a baby monitor and all of that kind of stuff, you might be able to do the training while the baby is napping or the toddler is napping. And again, you're just right outside the door. So you're not actually like leaving your child home alone, your child and your dog home alone. Just being right outside the door that way can be an option for those busier households. And then training on the weekends as well, when you might have a partner who could take the kid somewhere while you do the training, that could also be an option. But I guess the biggest thing with all of the obstacles that we'll be mentioning is that if you can't train under ideal conditions, then doing something is better than not doing anything at all. So like I said, train when your child is napping. That's better than skipping training altogether and only doing it on the weekends, if that's the only time you have availability to train.
For sure.
When the kids are a bit older and they're going to either like preschool or elementary, middle, or high school, then it gets a bit easier because you can train while they're at school, provided that you either work from home or, you know, have some flexibility in your schedule. Travel can be a big one that can interfere with travel.
Oh, travel.
Yeah. Hmm. So I have had a couple of different clients who have had busy travel schedules with work. And what I would find with training is that it did affect training. So not only could they not travel when they were, they could not train when they were traveling, but also when they got home, the dog was a little bit clingy for a couple of days. So, you know, even if they were only traveling for 2 days, they couldn't train for those 2 days and then maybe couldn't train for a couple of days when their person got back. And then, you know, so that's 4 days of not training. And then, so when they resumed, we had a drop a little bit in duration before we could start training again. So my experience with the clients that I have who've traveled regularly has been, if the dog struggled with that kind of routine change, that over time, the dog struggled less and less and kind of got used to that new pattern of, okay, they're going to be away and then they're going to come back and then they're going to go away again. And it ended up to where it really over time didn't affect training very much. So what we did was, you know, we didn't have the sitter train with the dog because that was just too much of a different scenario. And then we would give the dog a couple days to readjust as needed. You know, when the dog started acting like themselves again, we would go back to training. We would always start with an easy win. And then we would kind of get a feel from there how the dog was doing. And so it was a lot more nuanced than like following a progression, but we were able to do it, and the dogs are doing really well even with that travel cycle in there now. So, and then other dogs that I have, I'm working with some newer clients now, and they have been traveling a little bit and the dog is completely unaffected by it. So just because you're traveling doesn't mean your dog, you know, will struggle when they come back, but it is common that dogs do struggle after a routine change like that.
Yeah. So what you're saying with your first one you mentioned is the routine is out, but they got used to the travel. So in fact, the travel becomes the new routine sort of thing.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. It becomes part of the routine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's tricky though. So, I think the other thing we should mention is that, you know, something that can scupper your training plans is if your dog's not feeling well. You know, a sick dog is probably not a good dog to train, but I always say to my clients, like, imagine if you had a full-blown migraine and someone asked you to do something that you found incredibly challenging, how do you think you'd be able to cope with it?
Exactly.
It's probably not a great idea to train if your dog's got some sort of gastro issues, diarrhea or something, or, you know.
Oh, definitely.
But just in general, like if you, and I say this all the time, like no, apart from in our separation anxiety training where it's so essential to understand our dog's body language, not, you know, it's good to understand a dog's body language in general, but specifically your dog's body language.
Right.
But apart from that, like observe your dog generally anyway, and what do they look like when they're feeling well, like when they're healthy and feeling vibrant and, you know, their normal doggy self, so you can identify when they might be feeling off color and maybe they're the days that you might not want to train.
Right, right. Yeah, I think that's a really good point. One that kind of comes up a bit is, in addition to the gastrointestinal stuff that can happen, is dogs going into heat or having their season. That can really affect some dogs. And if they're struggling with even like a phantom pregnancy or something like that.
That's I've just had one of them. Great. Yeah.
Did you?
Well, no, I didn't. I didn't have
it. No, I know.
No. So shout out to Kate and Georgie and Buffy. Buffy the Vampire Slayer. But yeah, so Buffy is a dash hound and she she had a phantom pregnancy and it went on and on and on. And boy, did that dog just really struggle. Yeah. So we, I just said, we're going to have to just pause the training. We were getting out really well in time. And I just said, like, I just want to, let's get her over this bump, because it wasn't like a minor struggle. She wasn't coping at all because all her hormones were going crazy and stuff. So
Yeah. That can be really tough. So anything like that, or even after a neuter or spay surgery, it can take dogs a little bit of time to adjust or to heal from the surgery. I did have a client whose dog had chronic ear infections, and that would just really affect our training too. Like, cause she would, it was almost like she'd be doing really well. And then we would, she would have a struggle and I'd be like, I noticed she scratched her ears a couple times. Can you check? And she'd like have an ear infection every time. And so, so stuff like that can have a big effect.
Absolutely. Yeah. And also, I mean, just things that, disturbances in the household, like somebody leaves or there's some stress in the household for whatever reason, you know, relationships, whatever, that can destabilize the dog.
Yes. Yes, it can. For people who have schedules that like they might even work from home, but are just busy people and have trouble finding the time for a session. One of the things that I recommend is to try to tie the training to some other routine that you do. Like, so say, you know, you have breakfast, you take your dog for a walk, and then you check your emails, right? And like, so somewhere tacked onto that routine, like wherever it makes sense for you, add the training in. So then it becomes easier to like fit it in because you're just like reminded it's just part of the autopilot of your day. So I have found that that really helps a lot of times, especially in the early days. Like the training sessions are just generally so short. And if you can start it up as part of your routine in those early days, then as the durations are longer and the training sessions as a result take longer, it's already kind of been growing gradually. So you've made time in your day for it. So I think that's a tip that has helped a lot of people there.
It is hard for people to get to fit in the training. And building it as a habit is a good idea. But again, when you do set that time aside, you still have to look at the dog in front of you and say, is this a good time for you?
Exactly. Yeah. And part of that is, at the beginning of training, we're always like trying to help our clients discern, like, does your dog have a time of day? Like a lot of younger dogs, like 4:30 in the afternoon is like not a good time. Like they're going to be like super active then, right? So that's not a good time to train. But generally there are certain times, like maybe, you know, 10 a.m. is a generally good time, or maybe 8 p.m. is a good time. But just like knowing what those times are and then marrying it to a place in your schedule. And then still exactly what you're saying, Ness, is like, it might be 10 a.m., which is generally a good time to train, but today your dog isn't in the training mode, right? And so that's why I always tell people, like, save your skip days for days, like your days off, for days like that, when the training just isn't going to work out and your only time to train is 10 a.m., but your dog's not in a good place of mind. Well, that's just a day you don't train, maybe. So I think another one that I'm thinking of is when you're just not in the headspace to train.
Yeah.
Right? Like, so yes, maybe you got a bit of bad news at work, or you're just feeling resentful and overwhelmed and all of those negative feelings about having a dog with separation anxiety, or maybe, you know, you got in an argument with your partner, or maybe, you know, there's a million things, maybe you got in a car accident that day, you know, like there's a million things that could set you in the kind of a negative headspace, or a headspace where you just don't feel like it's in you. And to that, I say, just
skip. Don't train.
Just skip it.
Absolutely. You know,
like, take care of yourself, because like we always say, it's a marathon, not a sprint, right? So it is a long-term thing, and it's, you have to take care of yourself in order to help your dog through this. So if you're noticing that you have burnout because of your dog, then I think it's really time to examine that, or to, if you're working with a professional, then, you know, speak with them about it and try to come up with some ideas on how can I, you know, how can we tweak training, or how can I get more support? How can I, you know, fill in the blank? A lot of things are, you know, building your village, making sure that you have people to help you, help support you, so that you can do not only the things that you need to do, doctor's appointments, grocery shopping, you know, that kind of haircuts, you know, whatever, but also the things that you enjoy doing, like whether that's some kind of exercise that your dog can't come with you on, or having a meal with a friend, or, you know, whatever the thing is, you know, make sure you're still doing those things. So treat yourself to those things as well as the things that you need to do. Cause I think it's really easy to write that stuff off and be like, well, I don't really need to do that, and I don't really want to pay a sitter for that. But, you know, your mental health is so important, and doing those things helps keep you going longer as well. So
I think an addendum to that is also that, you know, if your dog's had a couple of bad sessions in the training and you're feeling frustrated, not a great time to train. But if you, obviously part of the training plan is consistency. So, you know, if you are feeling like that, then just do a short session, set your dog up for success and have a win. And when you have that win, that kind of is going to motivate you to do it again. And you won't feel so resentful and so frustrated and, you know, like this isn't working. Just give your dog an easy win and start feeling good about the training again. I think that's really important. Right. But yes, definitely go and spend some time with your dog and enjoy your dog outside of training. Like I tell my clients, you know, you've got to have a couple of days off, but go on and do some fun stuff. Together,
Right.
Go and go to the beach, go to the park, go and do stuff that you enjoy, go and sit in nature, go and sit in the backyard and just soak up the sun and, you know, and don't think about training or dogs barking, shush you. Just I think clearing your headspace and saying, right, I am having 2 days off or whatever it is, and I'm not going to think about training. I am going to go to the hairdressers. I'm going to go and have coffee with friends, all that stuff that you just mentioned.
Well, and I think you made a really good point with like remembering why you love your dog, right? Because it can start to fit with any behavioral struggle, it can start to feel like everything is about that behavioral struggle, right? So whether it's their overreactions to other dogs or new people, or whether it's being home alone, it can really, if your dog is having a struggle like that, it's really hard to focus on the things you love about the dog sometimes. And it's a good reminder to, one of my clients actually used to put a sticky note on her door with like 10 things she loved about her dog. So when she was doing the training, she would be like thinking about that. And
that's great.
I think that's really important.
Yeah, because we know that, you know, having a dog with separation anxiety, and as you say, behavioral struggles, but let's talk about separation anxiety, or apart from feeling anxious yourself because you're worried about your dog, you can feel stressed because you don't have a life, you can feel resentful, you can feel guilty because you know, maybe you don't want to leave your dog and you don't know how to leave the dog. And yeah, there's such a gamut of emotional things going on.
And as we know, training, you know, learning that new skill of being home alone comfortably, that process isn't a straight line. So there is going to be variability in the training, and there are going to be days when your dog struggles a little bit. And even though that's really, really a normal part of the process and an expected part of the process, it's still like gets you every time your dog, you know, doesn't do as well or doesn't hit the target duration like you expect them to. So just that roller coasterness of separation anxiety training can be emotional. It can add, it can amplify all those emotions that you're talking about, Ness. So
yeah. Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. Anytime training seems like it's hard to do, it's about making it doable, really, right? So what does that look like? It can be things like tying it to a routine. It can be, you know, doing training, some training sessions that aren't quite as ideal. It can be taking a break. It can be making sure you're spending time with your dog in enjoyable ways. It can be, you know, trying to help settle your dog a bit more before training sessions. So kind of depending on what the obstacle is, there is a solution there to try to set your dog up for success and to set your training up for success. So if you are having trouble helping your dog, help fitting in training to help your dog feel more comfortable while home alone, you know, we're here to help. Reach out and
don't give up.
Don't give up. Yeah. You can do this. I believe in you.
Yeah. I mean, so many people say, I've tried everything and nothing works. Don't give up. It will happen.
Yep.
Yeah.
Woo!
On that note, thank you for joining us on Tales from the Doghouse, Separation Anxiety Explained. If you're struggling with your training, reach out to one of us. This is what we do. We're certified in this, so that's what we do. And you'll find our, so anybody watching on YouTube, you'll find our details below. Or if you're on the podcast, listening on the podcast, just reach out to us. All our details are on there as well. So I'm Ness Jones. I'm from Separation Anxiety in Dogs Decoded in Australia.
We do work
remotely, so it doesn't matter if you're not in Australia or in America or in the UK. We work remotely, so we can help you.
Yes, that is so true.
Yeah.
Oh, I was just going to do my closing stuff.
Oh, you got it.
I'm Stacey Bell from Focus Fun in the US. And like Ness says, we are not constrained by location, so it doesn't really matter where you are. Just reach out to us if you are looking for some additional support. See you next time.
Bye.
Bye.